we've been trading like 29 years now. And we started off as a computer recycler. Then we became a MSP. And I'm just seeing a real change in just what an MSP is. It's suddenly, it's a lot more. It's
like, what are you seeing in the marketplace?
So, cybersecurity is major. So doing the gap analysis for customers is really important. So we go mm-hmm. in there and we measure where they're lacking in their technologies and then help them get through to cyber essentials. But there is so much on a small business, small, medium business. So they'll come to us, not just for the IT support and the technology advice, but now it's compliance. Now it's like, how do we manage our PCI aspect? And how do we safeguard ourselves from AI and make sure that we're making the right choices in the business? And yeah, so many changes. That's what keeps me interested.
Am I right in saying then that it's like, you know, originally 29 years, did you say you've been in business?
29 wow. years.
So it was really, in those early days, it was maybe, was it more about the hardware and the infrastructure? Whereas now it's like more, yeah, on that compliance side and the everything else, how it all integrates. That'd be a fair
29 years ago. Well, we weren't an MSP. We were a computer recycler. So we managed to get the UK contract with American Express. So we suddenly had an influx of thousands and thousands of machines over a given year of all their equipment coming in, and we had to wipe everything down. So we were a really small Sussex-based company, and we won this big contract. Well, it wasn't a contract to begin with. They were just trialing us out, and we just delivered. You know, they said collect, mm-hmm. we'd be there. Every week we were having to go in with vans, collect all the equipment out. So it was a physical workout as well as anything else. But we hardware, and it was mainly IBM equipment at the time. Mm-hmm. That got us the ability to understand about data and data security for a business, because at that level, the corporate is really worried about their data. And so we were able to manage the data wiping of all this equipment, asset lists. We were also doing a lot of putting the equipment back into charities for American Express. So they commissioned us to do about 100 installations across Sussex of their refurbished IT equipment into charities. Wow. Okay. So we had a great opportunity. We were able to meet lots of different charities, Mind, NACRO, Bluebird Community Transport, Age Concern. We were putting PCs into there, and we were making, you know, kind of new friends, new kind of circles.
They'd be happy with all of that. Back then, even secondhand ones were probably worth a serious bit of money.
Yeah. So it was good. You know, we go in, we put a printer in, we make sure it all works, put a copy of Office on there, and you still get the charitable license from Microsoft and put it on there. So yeah, we're very proud of that stage where we were installing lots of equipment into charities. Okay.
Are we going to go through the whole history here? So bringing up to where you are now, what's the evolution here? What's happened in between?
Okay, so after we were with American Express for about 10 years, one door shuts, another one opens. The NHS came to us, and we were able to win a contract with them. And part of during that time, we were handling a donation into Brighton & Hove Albion Football Club to their charitable arm, Albion in the community. And from that, we cut our teeth with installing servers, Wi-Fi equipment, and laptops. And we won a contract to look after 7 football centers for all their IT. So suddenly we had to become MSP, right, and learn it. Yeah. And so, yeah, we kind of transitioned. We still do the recycling, so it's a major part. If you come to our business downstairs, we've got recycling, lots of decks and shelves, Faraday cage, and workbenches where we can process the equipment. Then you go upstairs, and we have a help desk upstairs where all the guys working and ladies working on on customer machines. But I like that. I like the fact that the MSP stuff really taxes us, especially where we are today, seeing all these developments like AI and Copilot. Where we're going to be in a year's time, who knows?
You know, I'm like, in 3 years' time, I'm like, is there going to be even like what is an MSP even going to look like just with what's happening in the space with AI? I'm just like, I'm trying to get my head around what's going to change? I don't know if you thought about that.
I think we offer co-pilot consultancy. We need to know that business really well. We need to know all the kind of chinks in the armor, where it's going wrong. So every different silo in a business, HR, the sales process, the executives, the shareholders, every single silo of the business has got problems and needs to get metrics in and needs to understand how it works. And Copilot helps you contain the data within your tenancy, even though it's re-indexed. Yep. It's not going out like ChatGPT. It's kept in the business. It's
all held in the Microsoft tenant.
Yeah. So you would need to go and spend time with HR and say, what is it you're looking to achieve? What are the multiple questions you get every week that you could
exactly
fix with a chatbot on Teams or in SharePoint? And so you just, you can index and upload all your components, documents and framework into there and then make it available for everybody to just quiz and ask. But suddenly that HR person is available to deal with the other problems. You know, not just having to respond to every email coming in saying, how many days I've got left this week?
Yeah, exactly. There's all those HR type questions that come into that department. But HR is a little bit more than just that, isn't it? It's like, dealing with people, which I don't think AI will ever, well, it probably will solve it, but there's a lot of data it has to be trained on in the real world before it can learn that stuff.
I did meet with someone last week that had done that chatbot and had uploaded all the compliance documents into chatbot. And that was answering all the human resources questions that were coming into that department. That does the heavy lifting and then they can get on with the other stuff. They don't have to be stuck to their desk answering emails. Then there's customer services, how do you deal with complaints and how do you get all these different silos working together? Why are we getting complaints coming into a customer services, not my company, but other companies. We don't see complaints. We have a complaints email box, but it's empty.
It's the same as the thank you one in IT. I always find it's like, you'll get a thanks on the phone, but I used to have this folder in Outlook. It was called praise. And there's like maybe one or two emails in it. It's like, cause the problem's fixed. It's like move on to the next thing. So that we've covered HR, we've covered customer service, but okay. From an IT department or an MSP, did you learn it from a co-pilot perspective? Then what do you think it would be useful for there?
So if you've got a business and they have the luxury of having an IT department or an IT bot that sits in there, regardless of whether they engage a third party MSP like us, that IT engineer might not necessarily understand all the pains and problems of a business process. So like customer services, there's no way he or she's going to know what the problems are unless they spend time with the business and say, well, where's it going wrong? Is there anything going wrong? And how can we address it using Copilot and using that kind of technology? And before you can even look at Copilot, one of the things now, because we're getting some interest, customers are starting to say, we'd like to know how this worked, but it's mapping out the permissions in the business. So just making sure that person that has that license has the right to look at certain data over different aspects of the business. So an IT department in a business might not be the best person to be using that license because they wouldn't know how to use it. What they should be doing is empowering the people in each of the divisions.
Yeah. Okay.
Head of customer services. Yeah. And training them up and then letting them go with it. And then just running parallel with them and just making sure that they're getting all the prompts correct. They're understanding that they can pull from Microsoft Planner. They can use Power Automate to inject that kind of information from Copilot to somewhere else. So it's quite complex. But I see it as an opportunity for MSPs.
We'd have to
be close to a business. We'd have to get, it's that kind of consultative aspect.
Yeah.
So it takes time. But it'd be rewarding for both parties because how important is that if we can go in as an MSP, understand their business, understand the problems and come in with the tech to fix that problem. That's more than we were doing 5-6 years ago as a MSP.
Yeah.
We were supporting the endpoints, but now it's just blown up.
So what other elements do you think has blown up then? So you mentioned like compliance is a massive thing. I know like, you know, businesses out there, their suppliers, their vendors, their customers, I know are asking all these compliance related questions. If you're going for like a tender or something like that, you have to meet these, you know, these specific standards and compliance. What, you know, out with the AI thing, which is really maybe only 2 years, what other things you've seen that have kind of, you know, blown up in the last few years?
So it started, I think, with questions about PCI. So when customers were taking card payments, they were getting standard forms from third-party supplier or banks. And then we would help with those forms. And then we saw over a couple of years, those forms got more and more complex. And then we had to start scratching our heads saying, well, actually, how is it all configured? And now, you know, so with pen testing and vulnerability scanning, it's kind of a continuous compliance monitoring within a business. So an MSP has to make sure that they're constantly being screened and checked, and where there's a problem, we jump on it. So I guess the kind of the risk has moved to us, towards the MSP a bit more, I think.
Yeah.
And so as we're not really, as MSPs, we're not really, I think more and more we're going to see there's going to be more kind of compliance frameworks, and it will come down the line on us, because it used to be we'd have to become a Microsoft certified partner. But it's grown so much more. So in our role right now, we're looking to become a cyber essentials gap analysis kind of approved vendor.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So that, you know, hopefully we are one step ahead, because we've gone through all the formalities of a kind of IASME framework. So all questions are similar to ISO 27000. They have a level 2 accreditation and quality principles as well. So we're having to self-govern. We're being audited actually, but we have to make sure that our processes are correct. So, and that will happen. I think that will come down the road for every MSP. It'll be, you've got to know the framework you're working within and how it's been delivered, how you're constantly checking it over a given year. So I think, yeah, compliance is coming down the line for all MSPs as well. I think it's really important.
Yeah.
I
certainly see that even in the States as well. You know, things are getting tighter. And I think, you know, even if there's like there are obviously accreditations towards it, but ones that are potentially mandated by the governments and things like that. Once we're going down there, that's going to help standardize things. From an MSP's perspective, there's a lot to cover there in regards to, you know, compliance. And it can be like a big can of worms for certain types of businesses. Do you, here at IT Rockstars, we're always in the marketing sense, we're always talking about really trying to get MSPs to verticalize and niche down in a specific industry and work with those types of businesses, because it makes the thing much easier to do. From a marketing perspective, do you think is it similar in the MSP space when it comes to these compliance type services, where if they can pick one or two industries and be the compliance expert or the, you know, the cybersecurity expert specifically for those industries, is that something that you guys do, or are you just helping all sorts of businesses?
All sorts of businesses. I think where a business realizes that if they're going for a tender, they're going to have cyber essentials bus, then we can help them with that. You know, if they can get the self-certified cyber essentials, I think everyone should get that, because
that's a tick box exercise though, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's not too expensive. It's,
yeah,
you know, and it's not too laborious a task. I just think it shows their suppliers, their customers, their supply chain, that they're doing their bit to understand. They understand. They're with it, and they get that they've got to have some kind of user awareness going on. Whether the problem with the self-certified, it could be just a couple of people that take that passed that piece of paper, passed that exam, but it hasn't necessarily washed down to the rest of the business. So then you need to have user awareness, but you can get gamified user awareness to £5 a pop per person per month. And you can run it through Microsoft. You can get people to come up. Yeah, we know and recommend people that go and do user awareness training on the site.
Like in person.
The Southeast Resilience Cyber Center, we hooked up with them as a partner, and they do some really entertaining kind of 1 hour kind of whistle stop tours of how to be careful in cyber hygiene. And I think that's really, you know, I try and invite as many businesses and charities to that as possible. We had about, so we did an event last year. I think it was about 35 businesses turned up and charities, and they all loved it. Free of charge. So what's not to love?
Exactly. Yeah. This sounds great. And it's like, I've been to a few of these things, and like the thing that I always find that seems to strike a chord, certainly in like the local business community, is when a business has been hacked. And I've seen this where I am, that the business in question was actually very open about their hack, which isn't usually the case. And you know, there was the MSP that was sort of, you know, servicing that business and had to deal with the hack. They were kind of proud of the story. You know, it's like, oh, they got hacked. This is how they got hacked, but this is how we recovered them. I find those types of stories where you're honest about the situation, you know, because that was the first question when I heard it. I was like, how did that happen? But that's what I've always picked up from these sort of events. So yeah, and I want to change the topic a little bit. I had something on my mind when you talked about your beginnings. This is me just getting into my geek here. And there's probably people in the audience. I know there's people in the audience. Peter Recycling, like, what's that business model? Like, how'd you get into that? And especially back 20 years ago when, like, I'm going to assume like the tools then were maybe a little bit more rudimentary. But I would love to know, like what, the biggest question I've got is like, what happens to all the hardware? Does it just end up going on eBay? I mean, that's like, no, I have just no clue how that business model works.
Yeah, no. So in the beginning, there was no kind of policing of recycling, and it was free. So the equipment came in, and CRTs could end up anywhere, India, Africa. Equipment was being shipped out. It was a free for all. And that's when we had the weed directive come through to kind of clean the channel up and stop the gray channel. For us as a business, my co-director Trevor came up with Kill Disk. He had his own kind of version of how to kill the data.
Okay. There's one called Boot and Nuke. And I'm like, I'm thinking, was that available 28 years ago? I think.
I think it was. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was. So we were using tools like that. So we were dealing, we had a small kind of like industrial unit, had cobbled stones, and it was the humble beginnings of a business. So we would have these trolleys, and we would fill it with equipment, and we'd have to rumble across the room to get it from, you know, bringing it into the business and then start processing it, testing it. And then we'd have to find areas where, right, that doesn't work. That's where all the dead CRTs are going to go. All the good ones are there, and we're going to find a buyer for it. And the problem was, we had so much kit coming in, we had to just keep processing it. So, but you know, fortunately, we've sold within the EU, and we have sold mostly in the UK. When we can't fix equipment, it's the same today. When we break down equipment, so we will put hard drives separately into a container. We will put their TFTs into one container, and the good chip we try and reuse because of the impact. You know, if we can put equipment into charities or schools, if they can be reused there, then they're still really good. And that's the thing that we're starting to learn about, is this sustainability. You know, I used to kind of think that the green concerns about equipment were maybe an overstretch, but they're not, because the for every monitor that's made, how much energy goes into that? If we can keep hold of that and pass that on, it'll be a really good thing,
isn't it?
Yeah. So we were dead. You know, we did everything we could to make sure the equipment would be recycled first, so given a second home, or recycled and then so properly sent to proper we contractors. So we okay. ensure that equipment that also you have to be registered with the Environment Agency. So they come and do little inspections, unannounced inspections.
The health and safety inspections.
Yeah, the chips okay. where you've got this equipment. We know you picked it up from London or wherever. Where is it going? Can you tell us where that particular item went?
So paper trail. So
you have to become registered with the Environment Agency, and you have to pay for those different licenses. Okay. So
interesting.
Some goes on eBay. I mean, that's a good thing. That's a great thing.
I've always wondered, my early days in my IT support days, it was like almost a perk of the job. Oh, there's this old hardware. It's got to go somewhere, you know? So, really interesting, Jan. So what else do we want to cover in this interview? Cause we've covered quite a few things here, but there's anything specific that I'm probably going to miss because I'm not sure about my interview skills here. If there's anything specific you want to discuss.
No, I mean, if you want to ask me what we've gotten out of dealing with IT rock stars.
Oh, since we've forgot about, well, I was going to do that after, but yeah, let's go with that. What have you got out of IT rock stars?
So with what appealed to us about IT rock stars was it was the kind of when you sign up, you get the back catalog of all the kind of features and articles, and I love the fact that you're the videos are made for you. So we were able to put in the videos and we're using them on YouTube. You've got each week, each month, there's different aspects to concentrate on. So I've enjoyed it. I think I like your style with the books and the kind of the item, you know, the kind of ideas that you draw to say, right, this is how you can do a lead magnet. And we've had calls as well. You've supported my company with some marketing support. Yeah. That has been really good when Luke's been on the call as well. And we've shared insights and ideas on different things. So it's great. It's a kind of third party kind of marketing investment, I think. It's not expensive. I think it's well priced for what we get. And so you do a good job.
Oh, well, I'm happy to hear that. I don't usually ask for these type of testimonial type things. So
I appreciate the kind words, Jan. I just need to catch up. I mean, you throw these ideas to us like, okay, you've got these books, go ahead and go forth and multiply. And I just need to go do that. You know,
and last time I spoke to you, and your son, Lou, I'd mentioned it to you. I was in the receiving end of one of your marketing campaigns. You'd send out, I think it was cold emails you were doing at the time. And there's a lot of MSPs at the moment that's really, they're all going down that route with it. But I'd like to know like what your experience of that was, because that was some time ago. Now that was about a year ago, I think.
So cold email marketing is just a way of throwing the brand out there. What we do, can we help? Mm-hmm. Hopefully catching someone off, not off guard, but just ready to make a change or that sounds really good. And we wouldn't get some amount of that percentage wise. It's very low, you know, so with cold email marketing, a lot of people just been here. They have no idea who we are. And we're just friendly in the emails. We try and come across as honest and friendly. That's who we are. So if you do engage us, that's what to expect.
Did you get results out of it? That's kind of what I was.
Yeah, we did.
You did.
You know, we could do with more. But we got enough to kind of like, I've definitely sustained it. It helped with the campaign. So the cost of the campaigns were covered by what we got. It was our biggest kind of win was on pen testing.
Wow.
Also dark web monitoring. We offered that as well. And we just said, look, you've got no worries about doing a dark web assessment for you free of charge. Mm-hmm. And you can either work with us or not, but it's free of charge.
And then
the external pen testing, we offered a couple of IPs and some people took us up on that. And some customers are still on them working with us. You know, a couple of customers in London where we've putting pen test boxes, and every quarter we're running tests for them. So I think the cold email marketing is interesting. And this wasn't really me. This is my son. He was just,
yeah. I know. And that's why I mentioned, like, I know he was the one doing it.
Yeah.
It was interesting to know what the results were. Cause I tried it and I couldn't get it to work. But on the email front, and this is again, where I am, I'm up in Aberdeenshire in Scotland. There's a company not too far from me now called Reboot Computers up in Forest. And they've been on the go for years, and they've always seemed to like follow me around in the positions that I've been in IT. I don't know how they got my contact details, but I get an email from them once every 6 months. And it's like, how are you doing, Scott? We're going to be in your area with their van. Do you have any old equipment that needs recycled? But I think they must just have like this like list of people that work in IT for the local area. Like, and they just hit it once every few months. And I think that's probably quite effective for them. So that's my personal
problem is, sorry, Scott.
No, on you go. Your video's jerky. That's probably just here, though.
Isn't the problem, though, that you had moved from being an IT into the MSP, and then you went sole trader?
Yeah.
Many years ago. So that data is really old and ideally should be updated. So you could do him a favor by saying, look, I run an MSP marketing company.
I still have hardware though, you know, there's still hardware on the go. Interesting. So yeah, I really appreciate the kind words, Jan. You know, if I guess from your, you know, 28 years is some time in business. And this is like, I'm trying to like get a lesson from you here in business for our audience. Our audience are MSPs. What do you think is the biggest lesson you've learned in your business over that sort of stretch of time?
I think try not to be distracted. I mean, we tried different ventures, trying to get out into London and running a business in London. And then we just realized just focus locally, then focus on just making sure that you know, you're not cost driven too much. Like, you know, you're not, our seat prices are changing because we're realizing the value of what we're actually offering is growing. It's changing all the time. You know, yeah. It's mm-hmm. so much more than what it was 5-10 years ago. So right now we're at the point where we are examining that and just, you know, and hopefully it will reflect in our price. So that, and maybe we should have done that sooner. And it's just difficult though, because when you're just firefighting, it's difficult to know what's right, but we're getting there, you know. So and every day's interesting. I just wouldn't give out just yet. So
is that right? Until you retire. Last time I spoke to you, you were going to be moving to, was it Tennessee or something? Or you just got back from there and you're like, I think you were fed up with the weather.
No, I can't stand England. I can't stand the weather. I think it's depressing. It's there is no sunshine anymore. So it's really becoming that aspect is horrific over here. But Luke has moved over to Tennessee now.
Yeah,
he's been there for 6 months and he loves it. And it's the sun every day and it's warm. It's
really warm there.
Yeah, and it's a great place. You know, he's snowboarding. He's riding downhill bikes, and here we just got rain outside all the time and gray sky. It's like an ashtray. It's like an upside, you know, it's like an ashtray out there. But so I don't know, like looking forwards, we'll just see what this, you know, AI is going to do to the marketplace. I think it's transformative. I really do. You know, I think Copilot is going to be a main changer.
Yeah, it's going to hit so many things so differently. It's so difficult to, I find it difficult to just predict what's going to happen, because I can see what's going to happen with like cars. Like the example I give is like, you know, you get your Teslas that are almost driving themselves now. They're training on all that data now. So your car's sat in the car park or the garage for most of the day and the night. So once these cars are able to drive themselves, you can lease your car out. So the price of car ownership is just going to drop dramatically. No one's going to own a car. I think that's what's going to happen. you'll basically be able to go anywhere. Like you'll be able to hail a car for like a pound and go anywhere. So I can see what's going to happen there in 5 or 10 years from now. But it's things like it's the white collar jobs, you know, the professional services, what we're in, what's going to happen there. It's really difficult to try and figure out how to position yourself. But I think they're where we are now, where you mentioned about this, almost like acting as the consultant, the AI consultant for businesses is really good positioning. Mm-hmm. But it's trying to think that bit further out. I'm just like, I have no idea. It's like that's when AGI is going to take over, artificial general intelligence, and we'll have some sort of, I think that's what will happen.
It is very interesting, but I worry about, you know, the reliance on things like an electric car in the UK. And I know Trump is actually said, no, we're going to encourage diesel and you know, proper motor fuel cars. We're going to stop all this Nancy Nick green kind of. That's a good thing. We need the brakes on a little bit.
Well, you say that, but you know, if these cars can drive themselves, and if you can go and lease out one of these cars, your cost of ownership completely drops. So that's going to appeal to a lot of people, because you can basically rent out your car for like most of the day when you're not in the when you're in the office or whatever. So I can see that they'll be gradual, and then I'll just be everywhere. But I guess we'll just see what happens.
I wonder if that's going to be for, you know, countries like the UK and France are signing up for all of this, and Germany, whereas America under Donald Trump is trying to change that. He wants to bring back car manufacturing, not necessarily electrical cars, and which is a good thing. I think, you see these cars and you have to be charging for 4 hours. You know, you got to park up, and that's no good if you've got like grid is down. You know, you need to get moving somewhere.
Yeah, they still do have to sort out things like that. But I almost see it like ChatGPT, where it's like, you know, when it's released, it's like there's just like this light bulb moment, and the whole market moves. And I think that's going to happen. It just wouldn't make sense for it to be any other way. If you look at AI and Copilot, what you can do with it now, like, you know, if I had to go and write some sort of formalized report for someone, to sit down and spend a day, you know, typing away at it, whereas I can get a really good outline from Copilot in about, you know, 30 seconds that I can then start working on, fill in the blanks. It's just a game changer. So. Yeah.
And Copilot's only been going a year. So I think they've ironed out a lot of things in that year. Now, speaking to Microsoft last week, as I met with some people, they said, you watch what happens within the next 1 year. They're kind of ready to just go boom. Yeah.
Really push it out. I'm looking forward to that and see what happens. Anyway, yeah, I think we'll leave it there. Fantastic having you on the show. I love it, because this is the first one we've done in 6 years. And it's great that you came on. So thank you for coming on. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
Just ring me, 01444-871-200, option 1, or go to the website, abcom.co.uk, or email me, yan@abcom.co.uk. Loads of ways to get in touch with us. So yeah, love it. Yeah, just happy to talk to other MSPs as well about how we can help.